You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right. All over the World Wide Web, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we've been on the air now for 15 years, and we've got all of our shows archived there, which is under the on-demand button. You can choose any Monday between the hours of 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. And then we also share all of that on our social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
That's right. And I want to tell you and Danny and Allie that I was in Washington, D.C. last Monday, and I heard you guys coming across so loud and clear.
That's right.
I heard Stanley talking, and I had some talking points. I quickly sent it. I don't know if you guys got it in time.
Of course we did, yeah.
I'm like, I don't know if they're going to use it, but I'm going to send it.
We did.
Because I know you get winded sometimes, and it, like me, I'm here to have you to bounce off of me. So, it was good, and it was a great event, gala, however you want to say it. And it reminded me of being kind, being nice, being respectful, and all of us using whatever happened in the past to make the present a better place.
Right.
It was a gala put on by the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation. And we saw Mamie Till speak about her son and why she decided to have an open casket. And, of course, that case did... was sort of like a part of the civil rights movement in this country as well.
Right, so, and we had the director, we had the folks that had written the story about it right here on the show.
Yeah, well, Keith Beauchamp has been a friend of mine since we started the show.
Yeah.
And I met him. He was on stage quite a few times, and he acknowledged me and our show, and of course I went with two good friends here from Brevard, and it was wonderful. So it was good. I mean,
no wonder we got so many more downloads last week.
I just feel like, you know, all of us should do our part, right, on planet Earth, to make the world a better place. And I'm very happy to spend some of my children's inheritance and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Making memories.
And I met some wonderful people too, which was really good. And I saw the cherry blossoms. But, you know, sometimes you do such crazy things, right? We are in a taxi, and the taxi is crawling, and there's so many people, and so many people taking pictures of these cherry blossoms. And what do? Leave our purse in the car, our little hand luggage, and say to the driver, we're going to jump out and take a couple of pictures. Well, whoa, and behold, the car start moving, and there goes the purse and everything else. And I'm thinking, this is a really different situation. So I took a picture of the back of the car.
Oh, smart.
You know me and my pictures. Yeah. I could save somebody's life with my pictures.
That's right.
And then he was a nice guy. He was from, I think, Eritrea, he said. That's a place in Africa.
Africa, countries.
And so he pulled over and he waited for us.
Aww.
But then I'm like, Sita Begee, don't ever do that again. Put your purse on your shoulder or under your arm, right?
But it turned out well, so...
We got our pictures.
Bad story turned good.
Yeah, and then we ended up going back to the cherry blossoms by walking, watching people fly kites. And, you know, you wouldn't think that the country was in utter chaos when you saw all the wonderful people sitting on the lawns, flying kites, having picnics. People were just living. You wouldn't think anybody there in Washington, D.C. was so worried about politics at that point in time. Because it
we used to say it all the time here on the show, and then of course it's a Tony Robbins favorite too, is what you focus on grows, right? So we're a team of folks that always get encouraged with the advocacy and the things that are going on just amongst us, right? And what we focus on and what we try and do to make the world a better place. We try and leave a good footprint for everyone.
Well, for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, on Mondays, we sit here in the studio. We talk about things that are going on here in Brevard County, Florida, in the state of Florida, the 50 states, anywhere in the world where people are advocates for clean air, water, sunshine, financial literacy, voting, watching your money in the stock market, whatever it is, retirement. We talk about everything about elder abuse, saving the whales, saving the manatees, which we'll talk about later. And today's no different. My good friend, Katrina Shaddix, is going to be calling in, and she'll be talking about the Bear Warriors United to talk about the case that she just won. She just won a case where she was advocating for the manatees, and so many manatees were being starved to death because of polluted water. And she won that case. So we'll talk about that. And then, of course, Virginia, you're here. You've been on our show before, retired teacher of 31 years, and you also did so many wonderful volunteering activities with the children and your advocacy for canine commandos.
For animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And, of course, Terry Falbo, my friend Terry, said if she gets time, she's going to call in as well. So we're waiting to see if she would call in and chat with us a little bit about Medicare for All. So we'll see what's happening, you know. So let's start with you, Virginia. Tell us a little bit about retirement and how is it going now that you're a retired teacher?
It's a blast. I recommend it for everybody. Oh, I feel good, too. Don't get me wrong. I taught for 31 years all here in Brevard County, and that was the profession of all professions for me. I loved it. I loved it. I had so much fun with those kids. And the last 20 years of my 31 years, I taught gifted children, kindergarten through sixth grade. And those kids are amazing. I mean, I was learning right along with them. I wasn't the teacher. I felt like I was not a teacher. I was just a facilitator, and I would let them take off with whatever it is that we were learning or the project-based. But a lot of it was kids. Those kids are the ones that are very worried about what's going to happen with this planet. They carry the weight of what is happening out in the world on their shoulders.
Yes. And you know what? You, when we started talking a little while ago, you said that you had some concerns about the teaching profession, the curriculum, and the impending cuts that are going to be coming to education.
Yes.
And I mean, for 31 years, this is what your advocacy was. So tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about what you're thinking about.
Okay, well, you know, our SAT scores dropped. I think, we're 47th in the nation now when we were number 5. And I can tell you now I have a page just for teachers, a private page just for teachers to protect them, to give comments. And I asked them, why do you think that our scores are dropping? And we all agreed, because autonomy was taken away from teachers. They're like robots. They all have to be on a certain page, 20 minutes each, and then moving on. You can't vary from the curriculum without your principal approving it. So I know somebody who wanted to read a particular book. It was denied. Even though it was part of the curriculum, it was still denied. So it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
It is not fun anymore.
Well, you know, the profession of teaching was such, I think Terry Falber's on the phone. Hi, Terry. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hi, thank you.
We'll be right with you. We are speaking right now. If you want to join in the conversation, we're talking with my good friend Virginia. How do you say your last middle name?
She Hamilton?
No, the middle one. You have three names.
Oh well, I don't use it, but Schifano is my
name. I always
name.
Want to say that name.
Schifano.
Schifano Hamilton,
yeah.
And she's a retired school teacher, 31 years, and we're just talking about what's happening with our education system, and then we'll talk a little bit about healthcare and retirement and all that. But, it used to be when a teacher walked into the classroom, the children stood up and said good morning to the teacher. That's how I grew up anyways, because it was such a respected profession. But today, you know, there are some teachers that would prepare their classroom for teacher day or parent work day. And you're lucky if all those parents show up.
Right.
Some are working two jobs. Some don't care. Mm-hmm. Some just didn't read the information that the children brought home in their backpack. And all that plays a part into teaching, right?
It does.
It's a relationship between the parent, the child, the teacher. Everybody has to be on the same page, on the same team. Mm-hmm. And you saw firsthand what happened with teaching when you have the higher-ups telling you what to teach, what not to teach. And then you don't have the time to tell the parents why you're teaching something the way you are. And then you have the children who are so distracted with social media and everything else. It's a very difficult time to be a teacher.
It is. And they're leaving. They are leaving. My last year there, my raise for the entire year, not kidding, was $48 for the whole year. That didn't even fill my tank. You know, so teachers are just not going over and beyond if they don't have to because they're so stressed with what they are required to do. So it's just, I've talked to several students in college that are getting their teaching degree, but they've said, I'm not staying in Florida to do so.
Yeah. You see a lot of people leaving, right?
They are leaving.
And so while I was prepping for the show, I was thinking about, you know, some of the things that since the elections and of course, these are things that Americans always worry about. Things like crime and gun violence, climate change, racism. Then we had the education system, the federal budget deficit, unemployment, illegal immigration, and of course, healthcare. And, you know, for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I think for the most part, most Americans, and Ellen and Ali, you could agree with me here, most Americans for the most part want legal immigration. But people come through the border, and we have to look at the root causes why people flee the land they were born in. And wars have a lot to do with that. Climate change have a lot to do with that. Violence have to do a lot with that. Bad governance of their own countries have a lot to do with that. And, of course, foreign policy. So the humane thing to do is to send the people back with dignity as a family. You don't keep children locked up in cages, right? You don't treat people, because we're all human beings at the end of the day. And I think no matter where you were born, you want food, water, shelter, and a life. So treat people humane. And I think this narrative that Democrats don't care about legal or illegal immigration is wrong. Almost every Democrat I know says, come to the country legally. No one says, hey, come and storm the border and let's see what's going to happen to you if we can get free food and free water, right? So, Ali, do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And one of my sons is a chief of immigration and all of that sort of thing from at the Fort Lauderdale Airport. But he was trained as a Border Patrol agent and what they go through to ensure that the people are healthy and saving, you know, worth saving in essence, because of they're not just sneaking in. They're the
freedom with dignity.
They are the traffic that gets hauled in and then turned loose and then say, find your own way.
Yeah.
So Les says there's just not enough people to help get them where they need to be.
Yeah, we need more agents, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, to say, I have lots of friends that are here with papers, but they're still considered illegal immigrants. You know, they have papers, they pay taxes, they work at great jobs, and they do fantastic things. But unfortunately, because they don't have the legal status of being a U.S. citizen, they're under scrutiny of having to go back to a country that they're unfamiliar with, and it may happen to them.
Well,
because of, you know, and these people have been in the country for, you know, more than 10 or 15 years, let's say. I mean, it's not anything that's new.
Well, I think the Democrats...
it's not from the Middle East either, by the way. I know people from Germany. I know people from Italy. I know people that are here, again, that are... And they still consider it, which that's the part that baffles me. They have they have immigrant cards, if you know, for lack of a better word. I'm not sure what the correct term is, but they have working rights in the United States. They have they pay taxes and they do all the right
things. Well, people are getting worried, but the truth of the matter is I think the Democrats dropped the ball on immigration when they were not messaging properly. If you care about illegal people coming into the country, say it. Say it loud and clear. Right. Put banners all over the United States. Because the Republican Party ran with that, and they won the election, right? But a lot of different things. So I think as human beings, it's our job when we have a voice on radio to be responsible and be held accountable and say, yes, I do care, and you should not come illegally. So we'll go to Terry. Well, Terry, if you want to jump in and add to that conversation, feel free to.
Well, yes, one thing I did want to say is that a lot of times people are being called illegal when what they did was not illegal. Like, the legal way for someone to request asylum, if they're facing dangerous conditions in their country, the legal way is to present themselves to an immigration person to cross, however they can cross, and then present themselves to an immigration person, and then that's how they get assigned a court case. But a lot of times the court cases are a long time before they can get them, because they don't have enough immigration officers and judges to hold.
Yeah, so there's a waiting period. So Terry, introduce yourself to our listeners on Viewpoint with Seed and Friends.
Okay. My name is Terry Falvo, and I am a concerned community member. I'm in Orange County right now, and I have a substitute taught all through the Orange County school system in all the different grades recently. So I am very familiar with the issues going on. I heard you talking about education earlier also. And regarding immigration, I didn't find out till I was an adult that apparently my grandfather was on my mother's side, was undocumented from Greece. And my mother didn't realize this either until she was an adult. So I think it was very common all throughout U.S. history that people came here for various reasons without documentation. And it goes through different periods of up and down when it's really highly scrutinized, and immigrants become like the scapegoat for all the problems of the country instead of a lot of times the problems are caused by people on top, but in order to deflect from scrutinizing what they have been doing or haven't been doing, et cetera, the problems get blamed on the most vulnerable, and a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's throughout history, right? Usually that's what happens. The people on the top who make the rules and regulations, they don't understand what's going on with the people in the bottom, right? And they are scared. So let me ask Virginia really quick. I want to segue a little bit to healthcare. So you're a retired school teacher.
I am.
And so you get how is your healthcare now? You qualify for Medicare, and you pay for Part B,
mm-hmm.
right? Now and so it's a good plan?
I think so.
Yeah.
Compared to the teachers' plan.
Right. And here's the shameful part about that. I meet people all the time who would say, I can't wait till I turn 65 to get Medicare.
I'm looking for a fake ID.
But here's the thing.
I'm just saying.
Here's the thing. Why should we in the greatest nation on earth mm-hmm. have to hope and pray to turn 65 and be healthy at 65 and still have working eyes and limbs and joints and backbone and no constipation, no diarrhea.
Well,
you know, I'm a nurse. I think about these, right? And because at 65 is when trouble starts coming. Why is it that we can't have Medicare for all when we're young? So we can enjoy having insurance, even if we have to pay a little bit more. So, Terry, this is where you have been so instrumental in helping people like myself understand why you were promoting Medicare for All, or what some folks call universal health care. So talk a little bit about that and what advocacy are you doing right now for that?
Right, yes. That's the other thing I didn't mention in my introduction. I am on the board of an organization called Medicare for All Florida, and you can look us up on social media, primarily on Facebook. And that is our, what we do is we do advocate for a system of universal single payer health care, which is really the only way that you could ensure that everybody gets quality, comprehensive health care by taking out the control that the insurance companies currently have over our healthcare system and the actual care that we get. And they override the doctors many times and decide what is allowed and what's not. And doctors have to spend a lot of their time fighting with the insurance companies, they tell us. So yes, we are also working on a state base besides the national, trying to educate people and work for a national system. We're also working on state-based universal health care, single payer, and that would save the state so much money, so much more money, because right now a lot of money is spent by the state on and state and local localities within the state and government employees for the health benefits, and a lot of it for the teachers, for the police, for the firefighters, for other government employees. And a lot of the money ends up going to the actual insurance companies rather than to actually provide health care for the people.
Well, Ellen is going to Google how much salaries the top CEOs of the insurance companies make in a minute. And I've seen it before. And a guy with a four-year college degree making so much more money than a surgeon who is actually operating on people, you know.
Yeah.
We just saw that right here in our town where they closed one of our hospitals, and we're all shaking our head, and the CEOs of the company walked away with a great package, financial benefit package, whereas the nurses' aides, the janitors, and all the people who ran the hospital and kept it running
were just cut off.
Go look for another job.
So the top five, because I did Google it, it's 2023 information, but still relatively good, is it averages out to about $20 million a year.
Per CEO of a
per
company.
Per CEO. So Andrew Witte from United Health Group makes $23 million. Gail Bordeaux from Elevance Health, $21 million. Karen Lynch from CVS Health, $21 million. Cigna Group, $21 million. Sarah London from Centene, I believe, is $18 million.
Right. I mean, when you think about
and
that.
And men and women.
Right,
so,
when you think about that, and then you hear of a person that says to you, and I'm sure, Virginia, you probably saw this in the school system, a child who has an itch on the skin or a hives on the back or have dental issues and can't chew properly or somebody who can't afford a pair of glasses, and then you see somebody making $20 million, you ask yourself, what is wrong with the greatest country in the world providing health care for all its citizens? And I'm sure you saw that in the school system.
Yes.
And I mean, and how do you address something like that when you see the kids?
So and here's another piece of this too. It's a 1.5 average, 1.5 million in salaries and 15 million in stock.
Wow.
So that's going to, you know, hopefully it impacts them just as much as the stock market has been impacting us lately the last couple of weeks.
So Terry, you know what? So now if we had a system such as that, which we probably don't know when that would happen, right? But people are advocating for it. What would happen to Medicaid? Would then the entire country get insurance, the single payer insurance, and then Medicaid would have to be part of incorporated into it?
Yes. You wouldn't need all these different payers and different programs and everything. Instead, it would be within one system. I do think that for a while they would want to keep like the VA system as a separate, but basically the way the bill is written, it would cover everything that any doctor or health professional says the person needs without the insurance company getting in the middle and saying okay to this but not to that and denying care in order to make those profits. That's the other thing, or the not necessarily the profits, but like you said, also the high salaries and bonuses and stock options and everything.
I think Virginia wants to jump in here. Hold on a second.
So Terry, my mother is 93 years old. She's in a nursing home. I applied for her VA benefits 7 months ago. Still haven't heard a thing. Applied for Medicaid. She was denied. I went back and applied again, denied, and I had to go and hire an attorney to get her Medicaid. Oh. And that's because she had more than $2,800 in her checking account. The last time she was denied, she had $4,000. And it's just, and then we had to pay an attorney to get Medicaid. There's something wrong, especially in the state of Florida, when you have all these retirees that they're not taking care of them. And I've just been frustrated many nights crying because of all the paperwork that's involved. It's just been a nightmare.
So it's kind of sad. You know, we're all raised. We have this great foundation at home. Grow up, get a good job, get a bank account, get a house, get married, preferably to a guy who have a little change in his pocket, right? A little ambition, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then you save your money together in a checking account, and you save your money. And then what happens when you get older and that money is not enough to take care of you, to tell you, well, you can convert to Medicaid if you have less amount in your checking account. Mm-hmm. But here's the kicker. There are many people that didn't work, didn't save, didn't contribute, and they get the Medicaid right off the bat. Something is wrong with a system where the very rich is able to write a check. The middle class can scrape by, and then the others can just get everything for free. Something is definitely wrong with a system like that, I think. And I think it's worth saying that I know Bernie Sanders had that plan and they were talking about it. But again, there are so many politicians with great ideas that they don't know how to message. One of the things about, and whether we hate him or we love him or we voted for him, about President Trump is he was able to use his expertise from being a showman, a person with The Apprentice and all that, to message, right? So where do you think they dropped the ball on a single-payer system and telling Americans that this was a good thing?
Yeah, I don't really know. But the one thing a lot of people don't realize is that the actual bill that was written, there were nurses played a major role, nurses that were sick and tired of their patients not being able to get the care that they needed for a variety of reasons, because of all the different systems and pay, you know, different health insurance companies and different programs. And, you know, each patient would have a different reason why they weren't able to get the care that they needed. And that's why the nurses got together and were the impetus, and also some physicians and patient advocate groups. And they are the ones that actually wrote the bill. It wasn't Bernie Sanders or politicians just coming together and, you know, having a great political idea that they just wanted to put out there to get votes. No, this was an actual movement by those who are concerned about and saddened and upset because of seeing people not getting the care that they need.
Yeah, well, you know, nobody listens to nurses, I could tell you that.
Or teachers.
And, you know, I we try to keep our show fair and balanced, and we try to understand that having a voice, especially here on AM 1510 WWBC and all our FM stations, that we're responsible with our voice, right? But I was just watching the results of this last election, the congressional seat with Randy Fine and Wheel. Andrew Wheel is his name. And they said,
Josh Wheel,
and excuse me. And they said the guy spent so much money on consultants. You're talking millions of dollars. I always wonder why these people who are running for office don't come and talk to a teacher, a nurse, a policeman. Why do you have to pay millions of dollars to a consultant to tell you how to run your campaign when the regular guy on the street, you talk to the guy in waste management picking up the trash, he'll give you some great idea. You're not in your head.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, we just had a town hall meeting, 350 people, and Mike Haridopoulos was a no-show. He's our man, supposed to be.
Right? So the people talk amongst themselves. But I was I was watching about this fellow who ran against Randy Fine, Josh Wheel, and I'm thinking, so people donate all this money to your campaign.
$10 million.
$10 million. And then you spend how much on consultants? You know? Like you talk to Terry Falbo, you talk to Sita Begee, you talk to Virginia Hamilton, you talk to Ali Tamber, you talk to Ellen, you talk to Danny. We are real regular people that speaks to our neighbors and our friends and whatever, and we can tell you what people are talking about. And it's not spending millions of dollars to a consultant. I think that is the biggest problem that politicians have. They don't go out and have town halls and speak with the people who they're supposed to represent.
Right.
But it goes through the same thing, too, and I've said this before, that even tax, you know, like if I could afford to spend $5,000 on a tax person to save me more money, I shouldn't have to do that. The paperwork should be real clear, should be really open, you know, easy to do without all these loopholes and, you know, what we're supposed to do here and what we're supposed to do there. And it makes it so hard. Again, we don't...
Being alive is a business. I swear to God.
Yeah, it really is. From the minute
are your own business entity, from the minute you wake up and God gave you health and strength and breath, you are waking up into a big bad world of where do I live? What do I eat? Where do I go to school?
It's exhausting.
Yeah, where do I sleep at night? Do I have insurance? Do I have cable? Do I have a TV to watch? Am I bored? Am I lonely? Do I have mental health, which I probably do? do I have food for the morning? And then people tell you, oh, life is not politics. And they say they don't vote. But come on. Think about it, Virginia. Isn't life, life is politics.
Especially lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Terry, what else are you working on besides Medicare for All?
Well, I am also involved in trying to counter Islamophobia right now because I feel like a lot of people don't understand and have the wrong idea of Muslims. They don't know Muslims. And so they believe a lot of myths or what, you know, certain aspects of the media show or whatever. So I also involved very much in that. And really any human rights issues. And recently we had some on Saturday. There were the rallies. And you may have talked about this before I tuned in. I got caught up and I wasn't able to tune in earlier, but there were the rallies against all the different cutbacks and firings and that are going on that are affecting all of us
well,
in different ways.
Well, you know, we have 1 minute left of the segment and I really appreciate you calling in, but you're right about that. My family comprises of Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Jews, Baha'is, and a few crooks, a few musicians, a few priests, a few of everything. And at the end of the day, everybody wants the same thing. They want health, stability, security. They want to practice their faith without anyone telling them. And there's no bad and good. There's good people and there's bad people, right? Mm-hmm. And when you single out one group of people because of the way they dress or what they eat, what they look like, their skin color, their hair texture, it is just wrong. And I'm so glad there's people like you that looks out for others and advocates. And, you know, and the other thing, too, you know, I was telling the folks in the studio this morning, one of my patients was telling me how sorry she was that a bomb fell in a apartment building in the Ukraine and killed about 20 people, including children, I believe, recently. And that same person said, we cannot feel sorry for the people in Gaza because then you're viewed as being sympathetic, whatever. But my take on this is we shouldn't have any wars. You know, we shouldn't have any wars. The Israeli people should feel safe and secure. Their people shouldn't be kidnapped. The other side should feel safe and secure. Ukraine. God gave us a tongue to speak and communicate with each other, right? And mm-hmm. we should be able to, elected officials all over the world, what is the UN there for, right? They're supposed to sit down and talk about the ills of their nation and their society and the safety and civility of our world. Because when you get on an aircraft, it's all different people getting on that aircraft, right? So we should trust each other. We should trust our governments, right? Yep. But anyway, we have our second segment going
like
to be. So you take it away, Ellen. And I think, Danny, just one commercial if you want, and it will go to Katrina.
Yeah, fantastic segment. We will be right back after these messages with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
The phone's.
Nine Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville,
John
Florida,
Croft Financial Dixie Group Crossroads is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisor.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Ellen.
That's right, all over 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we archive the shows there as well on the on-demand button, which each Monday, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Then, of course, we share it on all of our social media, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and our website, SitaMediaInc.com.
Right. And today's show, actually, you know, it just makes me feel like sometimes we don't have to have people calling in just to talk about a book or service or product or a politician or financial literacy, whatever we talk about every Monday. Sometimes it's good to speak from your heart. And it's like, if they had hired me as a political consultant, I would have said, don't give me $20 million, I'll take one. And I would have told them, like, go talk to the elderly and ask them, how are you getting upstairs in your home if you don't have assistance with a handle, right? I would tell them people need help with their bathrooms. Tell them that little children needs help in school, after school care, somebody to read with them, right? There are things you don't have to pay, give somebody $20 million to find out what's going on with your citizens, do you? Right?
No.
And so our second segment is another great advocate. My God, Katrina Shattuck, what a wonderful. She's the founder and executive director of Bear Warriors United. It's a nonprofit organization that focuses on protection and educating the public here in the great state of Florida about the black bears, wildlife habitat and corridors, natural lands, the waterways, and hear this, the manatees. And we want to talk to you, Katrina, today about what happened with that court case about the manatees, and then talk mm-hmm. to us about the advocacy that you're doing for the bears. So take it away. Introduce yourself if there's something I missed, and talk to our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hey, Sita, thank you so much. for having me today. This is Katrina Shaddix. I'm the Executive Director of Bear Warriors United, a nonprofit organization. And not only do we work to save bears and their habitat, we work for all Florida wildlife, which includes the manatees. And about, let me see, when did we file a lawsuit? Well, I think you remember, this has a lot to do with where your radio station is in Brevard County. You remember a couple years ago when we had over 1,000 manatees starved to death?
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
That was that 21 and 22. And it was declared an unusual mortality event. And it was just pretty horrific. And what had happened was the overdevelopment caused sewage to go into the Indian River Lagoon. And that sewage created algal blooms. Those algal blooms blocked the sunlight to the plants on the bottom of the Indian River Lagoon, which is the seagrass. And the seagrass is the main food source of manatees. So overdevelopment led to the starvation of manatees. We filed a lawsuit against the state of Florida, specifically the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and we filed that in November of 2022. We asserted that the FDEP, and now that's the same organization that tried to last year pave over our parks and put golf courses in our state parks and hotels. So we sued DEP for violating Section 9 of the Endangered Species Act, and that is causing any harm or take of an endangered species, a protected species. And that, in fact, was what they were doing, and it was their regulatory, their water regulatory regime that allowed all of this sewage to go into our waters. It's still happening today, but at that point, back in 2020-21, it was so extreme that we had a massive die-off of manatees from starving to death.
Right, and
so
you know, we're living in times when we're watching a lot of regulations being rolled back. Mm-hmm. And for an advocate such as yourself, that's probably heart-wrenching.
Well, it is, and that's the whole point. We obviously, the Clean Water Act does not work because the state of Florida has given us dirty water. So we had to get creative. My attorneys were creative, and we sued them for violating the Endangered Species Act. And it was in August 2024, the state had asked for our lawsuit to be dismissed. They do not want to admit all of this bad stuff is happening and that they are responsible. But the judge ruled that he was not going to dismiss the case. So that was a huge win because a lot of times they get dismissed. And especially in Florida, the political atmosphere right now, we thought we were just going to get pummeled. But the judge, a federal judge, ruled in our favor. It was not going to be dismissed. And then 3 months later in December, he ruled in our favor for a precedent-setting victory for us. He agreed, yes, the state of Florida did kill manatees. The state of Florida violated the Endangered Species Act by starving them to death with polluted waters caused from sewage spills. So that was a huge victory. We just went to our final trial on St. Patrick's Day and the day after, and we had to prove that the state of Florida still hasn't changed anything, and the manatees are still starving to death, being malnourished, and evidence of that is the historically high amount of baby manatees dying. So this the case is pretty much settled, except for this last ruling that we're waiting for the judge on, and it's to prove ongoing take, ongoing killings. And, you know, we have the facts, the science, the truth, the morals, and the ethics on our side, and we trust that the judge is going to make a good decision, as he has in the rest of our lawsuit. And if he doesn't side with us, my goodness, what a fair, intelligent, engaged judge. I've never seen anyone like him. He was incredible. So hopefully he'll rule in our favor, but that's what's going on in your neck of the woods in Brevard. And
what's the name of the judge? Time. I know you sent it for me. What's the name of the judge?
Judge Mendoza.
Okay, great. We'll have to remember that. So you know, there are so many nonprofits in Brevard and Orlando and the state of Florida. And your life's work has been advocacy for supporting clean energy and all the stuff you're doing. I was reading something where they said that you also on an advisory group that you give your input when they're building the toll roads here in Florida. And I thought that was so cool because I'm like, of all the advocacy, you know, people advocate for women's rights, they advocate for the elderly, they advocate for the environmental, for the humanities, but you have made this your life's journey. Your purpose in life is to save our environment, including sustainable growth management. Did you get involved in such an advocacy? We're all in awe of what you're doing.
Oh, thanks. Well, I have a team. My attorneys are amazing. My volunteers, I have almost 7,000 members in Bear Warriors United. So, but yes, I live, eat, and breathe my advocacy. I don't take days off. I will not go into any social event unless it has to do with my work of saving the environment and wildlife. So some say I'm obsessed, some say I'm dedicated. I just know that I'm doing what makes my heart feel good, and I'm doing what's right, and I'm standing up for those things in our environment that don't have a voice, but that keep us alive. Everybody needs clean water and clean air and natural land, and we need our wildlife. So I'm going to be a pain in everyone's butt and for the rest of my life until I die. But on this Central Florida Expressway Authority Board, they asked me to be on their environmental advisory board. And they're very, very gracious, very encouraging to make sure that I engage on every project they have. And the funny thing is, I oppose most of them, but they still want my input. So I do give CFX kudos for encouraging someone like me to be a part of their process.
But you would be surprised. We all learn something every day, right? I think people, if they open their ears and their hearts, they will learn something. And one of the things I learned from you, and I didn't know this was going on, talk to us a little bit about this bear trophy hunt.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that
horrible.
Sounds awful. Proposed December 2025, the hunt will include baiting, archery, and packs of dogs, all to do what? To kill bears? Black bears?
Yes.
So you're going to use...
Crazy.
Who in their right mind is going to use those three things to kill endangered species?
You said right.
Well, that's the thing. Right mind would. This is simply for trophy hunters, and it's a way for trophy killers to financially profit on the wildlife illegal trade. We have several Asian countries, China, Cambodia, Vietnam, that are pressuring licensed hunters, not pressuring, they're actually working together, and in Canada and the U.S., and the illegal wildlife trafficking of bear body parts does threaten every single species of bear on the planet. So they're already being stressed. Bear populations everywhere are already threatened. And in Florida, we have an especially egregious attack on bears. That's the loss of habitat. This is the overdevelopment, the clear cutting. And then on top of that, so we have poaching, we have wildlife trafficking, we have loss of habitat. We also have over 300 bears every single year get hit and killed on Florida roads. Now they want to put a trophy hunt on top of that. They're going to push these bears right into extinction.
So who, when you say they, is this something that the state of Florida is going to allow? Because they're going to have they're going to be meeting in May to talk about this at a commission meeting.
That's right. It is the state of Florida. Specifically, it's the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. It's made up of 7 commissioners. They meet 5 times a year, and they make decisions on our wildlife. And the kicker is almost every single one of them are developers, and they are appointed to FWC as commissioners by the governor in repayment for making huge donations to a campaign. So it's very political. There's 2 main guys on the commission, 2 commissioners that are bad. The rest of them, I don't think they want to have anything to do with this hunt, but the chairman, Rodney Barreto, a lot of people know him. He's the one that wanted to put condos on submerged seagrass beds and still is, a chairman over wildlife that he's trying to destroy their habitat of. So anyway, we've got Barreto, we've got Gary Lester. Those are the 2 that are pushing for the hunt. And so we have to go to the meet in May in Ocala, and hopefully we will have hundreds of people, hundreds of bear advocates there speaking out against the hunt with our science, with our facts, with our passion, and with our intelligence to convince the commissioners not to have this. And they should. These commissioners were not around in 2015 when Florida had the last bear hunt, and they killed dozens of lactating mothers. They killed a cub. I sent you a picture of the cub that they killed and stuffed into a cooler. And they were caught baiting. Well, now the new proposal is going to allow all the things that were not permitted before. So it's just like open season. And when they said that they were going to allow 9 guest hunters to accompany one hunter and a pack of dogs, so you have 10 people and a pack of dogs going after one bear.
Well, you know what? Let me just tell our listeners, for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and friends today, we're talking to with my friend Katrina Shaddix. She's the executive director of Bear Warriors United, and she's joining us to discuss the proposed 2025 Florida Black Bear Hunt, and also to talk about, we just spoke about the legal challenges for the manatees. But here's the thing, you know, we're living in a time when all of us, sadly, and of course, we see people talking about, mental health, the children, the people, the society, the citizens. And at this proposed bear hunt, they're going to have children, and the children are going to watch these dogs grab a bear and kill this bear so they could bring the skin home, and they can have a trophy, baiting stations, archery weapons, permitting out-of-state hunters and children to participate, hunting dogs to chase the bears into the trees, and allowing up to 9 people to fire at one bear. And then they're going to tell us, oh, people have mental issues. It's almost like you're sending the children off into war without telling them why you're going into war and why you, what resources and land and everything else you're going for. So how is, on God's magnificent planet, is this permitted where humans take part in? It's got to be money involved, right?
Sure, yeah. And the people making the decision are the biggest donors to a governor. So that's where the money comes in. The more they are able to get rid of protected species like the black bear, the gopher tortoises, the more they can get rid of that bear that's on a piece of natural land, and they can say, oh, well, we can develop it now. There's no imperiled wildlife on this land. There's no protected species on this land. It can be developed. And that's kind of the hidden, like these hunters think they're entitled to kill a black bear. Well, they don't realize they're being used as pawns by the FWC developer commissioners to eliminate all of the imperiled species on land, making it easier to develop. So, but the kicker is, you mentioned the children. You know, people, it is proven scientifically that trophy killers, trophy hunters are sociopaths and lack empathy. They're going to be subjecting children who would otherwise love bears.
Wait, I think our 31-year-old school teacher is going to jump in here. She is throwing her hands up in the air. Go for it.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was just saying our president's kids. They're trophy hunters.
Oh, they are.
Yes, they are.
I remember seeing that. I remember. Oh, my goodness. But the thing is, you know, like we live in a nation where we all talk about, you know, being our brother's keepers, right? We talk about waking up every day and making sure that children have a full stomach in schools. We talk about making sure teachers are adequately compensated. We talk about making sure our law enforcement officers and the people who serve in the veterans, the Homeland Security, that they are properly compensated for their work and their time. We talk about nurses on their feet 10, 12 hours a day, and doctors. And we are a compassionate society at times. How on God's magnificent planet does people allow others to go and hunt these beautiful animals just for money, just to make a buck? Or like you say, don't they have a heart and a soul?
No. These people who want to kill bears for fun and label it as recreation, they do not have a heart and soul. They are sociopaths and lacking empathy. And I just hate that they're going to impose this psychopathy on children. Children naturally love animals. They don't, you know, they have to be taught violence. They have to be taught to kill. and to not care. And that should be illegal. I can't even believe they're going to allow children to watch what dogs do to bears. And here's the kicker. FWC busted a bear poaching ring about 3 years ago, maybe it's four, that did this exact same thing. Nine people were arrested for taking their bears in the woods, taking their dogs in the woods. The dogs would tree the bear. They would shoot the bear in the tree. The bear would fall on the ground, injured, screaming, in pain, and the dogs would maul the bear to death, and these people would videotape it. Well, I happen to have called that in, and they did a one-year undercover investigation and, you know, charged these people, arrested them, prosecuted them, and now the FWC is going to allow exactly what they were so proud to stop just a few short years ago. The hypocrisy is absolutely stunning.
You know, humans are their worst. Human beings are their worst enemies at times. Really.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? We have 3 minutes left of the segment, and I want to 2 minutes actually quickly tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends how they can help to stop this process. Because I mean, I know they're having the commission meeting, and they're gonna. How can we sign a petition? How can we watch it virtually? With 2 minutes, if you can, let us know what to do.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. So the May 21st, 8:30 a.m., there is an FWC meeting in Ocala. This is where we're all going to show up to speak against the hunt. The more people we get there, the more chance the FWC Commission will vote against it. In the meantime, people can email their comments against the bear hunt to bearcomments@myfwc.com. They can also email me if they want talking points, if they want to get further involved, at bearwarriorsunited@gmail.com.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you, we've learned a lot today on our show. I don't know about you guys, but just the thought of that. Before
well, hopefully
you leave,
it sparks people to get engaged.
So I have 30 seconds for you. Is there anything you want to tell our listeners about why it's so important to protect these black bears? I know you've done so much work with the garbage cans, securing the cans so they don't get their heads stuck and all that. Take that 30 seconds and tell our listeners what we can do as lay people to help these black bears.
Awesome. Thank you. Yes. First thing you can do to save black bears is secure your trash. If you cannot afford a bear-proof trash can, I give out free bear straps. Email me again at bearwarriorsunited@gmail.com. Secondly, what you can do is, I don't know, I think that secure your trash, show up to the meeting, email, comment. Oh, and remember, bears. Florida black bears were the inspiration for the Florida Wildlife Corridor. If we get rid of the bears, we're going to get rid of millions of dollars that are going to purchase bear habitat for conservation and protect it against urban sprawl. We need our bears to save us and to save Florida.
Yeah, and just restore our natural habitat. And if you want to build and make all this money developing, think about who was living there first.
Exactly, or do it right. Redevelop areas in the city. Go vertical. Don't clear cut our forests. Just build smarter. You know, none of us are against building new shelters for people. We just want it to be done correctly.
Okay. And if people want to join your Facebook page or your website or whatever, give us that information as well.
I have a Facebook page, Bear Warriors United. Just you can search at that. My more active page is my personal page, Katrina Shadix, Shadix. And I do have a website, bearwarriorsunited.com.
And people can donate as well. They can donate time, energy, money, whatever it takes, they can give.
Oh, people's time is so valuable. I would love if they wanted to volunteer their time more than money.
Okay. Well, you know, you hit the nail on the head. My personal Facebook page is more active than my show's one. I get tons and tons of messages. People just like us. That's what it is. They like when you wake up every day and you say to yourself, you know what? I found my purpose on earth, and it is to make the world a better place and to take the knowledge that God have given us and the experience and make it into where we can help society. And I think that's all we can do.
Yes, we can do our best.
Virginia and Katrina, thank you so much for
Terry
had called in as well. Thank you so much for all of the knowledge and great discussion today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, tune in each and every week here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC, where we have more great conversations here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.